Okay, we're starting the Hamigdavar Parshas Truma. And I wanted to start with the Hamigdavar towards the beginning of the Sedra. Perek Chafei Pasuk Ches and Pasuk Tes, which again is in a certain sense an introductory, both an introductory Pasuk to the whole Sedra as well as an introductory Hamigdavar to the whole Sedra. The Asuli Mikdash, the Rabbanu Shalom tells Moshe Rabbeinu, they, the Jewish people, should make for me a mikdash, right? They should make for me a sanctuary. V'shochanti b'socha, right? And then I will dwell among them. So, right, the Hamigdavar on this pasuk. We also will mikdash v'shochanti b'socha. Pirush Rashi shehu avtocha. Rashi explains that this latter half of the pasuk is a havtocha, is a promise. If you make for me a mikdash, then I promise you that I will dwell among you. U'mshimachi pirush the mikra samach k'chol asher ani mare mechuber l'rosh hamikra v'yasi li mikdash k'chol asher ani v'gove. It's based on that that Rashi explains psukim ches and tes in the following way. Pasuk ches says v'yasi li mikdash v'shochanti b'socha. They'll make for me a mikdash.
And,
hold on a second. The pasuk says the asuli mikdash. They'll make for me a mikdash. Vishochanti b'socham, and I will dwell among them. Then pasuk tes goes on to say kichal asher ari mare osicha, in accordance with everything that I show you. Eisavnis hamishkan ve'eisavnis kol kelov, the design of the mishkan. And this design of all of the kelim v'chein tasu, so should you do. So Rashi writes on that pasuk, k'chol asher imare oscha kan establish hamishkan. Hamikra hazer mechubar lamikra shulamaylo heimenu. Right, this pasuk tes is connected to the previous pasuk, and the way you're supposed to read the psukim is as follows. The asuli mikdash kichol asher ani mare osicha. They should make for me a mikdash in accordance with everything that I'm showing you now. And if you do that, v'shochanti b'socham, I will dwell among them. Right. So in other words, v'shochanti b'socham is as if a parenthetical comment in the middle of a phrase. That's, I think, the art scholar's translation. I think puts v'shochanti b'socham between two hyphens, right? They should make for me a mikdash hyphen, and I will dwell among them. I think that's what I don't have an art scroll in front of me, but they should make for me a mikdash hyphen. I'll dwell among them hyphen in accordance with everything that I'm showing you. In other words, they should make for me a mishkan in accordance with everything that I'm showing to you. And then, if they do that, the shochanti b'sochem. So Rashi doesn't use the word haftacha directly, the way that the Nesiv quotes him. He's not quoting Rashi, but he's saying if you read the pasuk the way Rashi does, you have to come to the conclusion that v'shochanti b'socham is the result of what's going to happen. If they make for me a mikdash kichol asher ani mare osicha, right, in accordance with everything that I show you, so then v'shochanti b'socham. So then, if you do everything right, so then I will dwell among them. Right, okay, start. Here's a chumash. Right, so the way Art School translates in accordance with Rashi, they shall make a sanctuary for me hyphen so that I may dwell among them hyphen like everything that I show you. Right, so in other words, v'shochanti b'socham is going to be a consequence of doing everything right. That's what the Nesiv means by quoting Rashi. That is the haftacha. But says the Nesiv himself, that way of reading the pasuk is difficult, because what you basically have to do is you have to assume that the pasuk starts, stops, and says something else parenthetic, and then returns to what it was saying before. It's a difficult way to translate it. They should make for me a mikdash in accordance to everything that I commanded you to do. Then v'shochanti b'socham. So why doesn't the pasuk put it like that? V'gam kosher l'fi perusho. Tavnis hamishkan, the tavnis kol kelov hayu shirat suras hamishkan v'chelov, em kelov ma'ik siv b'menorah u'mizbeach b'yichud shira'o. Also, Rashi explains that they should make a mikdash for me, kechol asher ani mara el sicha, in accordance with everything I'm showing you. So that means that, says the Netziv, that means that Hashem is showing Moshe Rabbeinu the blueprint for the Mishkan and the blueprint for all of its kelim. He's showing Moshe Rabbeinu what everything looks like. And that contradicts what Chazal say, and Rashi quotes it later on, that Moshe Rabbeinu was shown the menorah, Moshe Rabbeinu was shown the mizbeach, right? In other words, there were certain kelim that was shown to Moshe Rabbeinu, but he wasn't shown all the kelim. And here, the way Rashi interprets it, is that Rashi, that Moshe Rabbeinu was shown everything. So, again, the Netziv is bothered by Rashi's interpretation. Elamadei pirush mikrazeh, minitani b'tosefta menachos perek zayin. Says Rashi, says the Netziv rather, the way I interpret this pasuk, I learned out from a tosefta. Right, it's a tremendous, I don't know, maybe it's not such tremendous bekiyas, but, you know, there's a tosefta in Menachos, says the Netziv, which quotes this pasuk, sort of derech agav, and the way the tosefta quotes this pasuk, you see what the pasuk, he thinks, really means. What's the tosefta? Tosefta in the seventh parak of Menachos says as follows. Rabbi Yossi Omer, kol zayin yemei miluim hoya shulchan batel b'lo lechem. Says Rabbi Yossi, throughout the Shivas Yemei Miluim, the 7 days that were in preparation for the Chanukah Samishkan, for the dedication of the Mishkan, the Shulchan had been erected, but there was no Lechem Apanim on the Shulchan. Why was that? So Rabbi Yossi goes on to explain, because the Shivas Yemei Miluim began on a Sunday, and the halacha is that the Lechem Aponim are placed on a Shabbos. Right? Now typically what that means is that they're switched on a Shabbos, meaning the Lechem Aponim of the previous week is removed, the Lechem Aponim of the current week is put on. But what happened that first week? So Rabbi Yossi says there was a whole week in the beginning, you know, the first week that the Mishkan was up and in operation, where the Shulchan sat without any Lechem Aponim, because they started, you know, the Avodah of the Yemei Miluim on a Sunday, right? And it was only that Shabbos that they put the Lechem Aponim on for the first time. So for a whole week, basically, it was out without any Lechem Aponim.
And the Pasuk says, Lechem Aponai, but
Tamid. Right, so Tamid means, once you put it on, it can't be without the Lechem. But there's a, you know, there's a pre, you know, an earlier period till it comes on. It actually was there functioning for weeks, as Rabbi Yossi, without the Lechem Aponim. Right? And, oh, so 1 second. So, in that Tosefta, the Tosefta says, Harehu Omer, Vayar Moshe es kol ha-melocha, Vinei osu osa, kasher tziva Hashem. It says later on in the end of Sefer Shmos that Moshe Rabbeinu saw the entire melocha, and everything was set up just the way Hashem had commanded. Heichon tzivahu, right? Where did Hashem command Moshe Rabbeinu to set up everything in a certain way? The Asuli Mikdash Vishochanti Besocha. Now the Netziv is bothered. Why are we quoting these psukim? In other words, one pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, saw all of the malach, everything that had been done, and everything was done properly. Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe, exactly the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu had commanded Moshe Rabbeinu. Where did he command him? Asked the Tosefta in Menachos. He commanded him here in this pasuk, "V'asuli mikdash v'shochanti b'socha." So, quoting this, the Netziv says as follows: "V'hu pele." This is the top of the right hand column. "Ma hishmianu b'zeh Rabbi Yossi." What's Rabbi Yossi telling us with these two pesukim? "V'gam l'ma yichet zeh mikra Yossi mikol haseder." What's unique about these psukim? I mean, if you ask me, where does it say Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe? Moshe looks at all of the completed Mishkan, and he says, well, everything has been done properly. Kasher Tziva Hashem as Moshe, just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu has commanded Moshe Rabbeinu. Where did Hashem command Moshe? The simple answer to that is Parshas Truma, Parshas Tetzaveh, the whole Parshios that talk about it. Why is there a need to single out this pasuk, V'asu L'miklosh V'shochanti B'socha? El Rabbi Yossi ainu mafarish mikras elahavtacha, the imken ainu kaseir aroi kamashikosafti. So says the Netziv, Rabbi Yossi is explaining the pasuk as follows. V'yasu li mikdash v'shochanti b'socham, make for me a mikdash in a manner in which the Shechina will come and dwell in that mikdash. In other words, the words v'shochanti b'socham are part of the tzivui, they're part of the commandment. Right? They're not a promise of some eventual result. If you make me a mikdash, then I'll dwell among you. No. V'asili mikdash v'shochanti b'socham, make for me a mikdash in such a manner that I will be, that I will dwell among them. V'achar kach, mefaresh hakasuv heachi umaseem garmash ev v'shochanti b'socham. And then Pasuk Tes is a follow-up on that. How do you build a mikdash in such a way so that the Shechina dwells there? So Pasuk Tes explains, "Kichol asher ani mara oscha es tavnis hamishkan es tavnis kol keilof." Build everything in the way in which I show you, according to the blueprints. If you do that, you'll bring the Shechina into the mikdash. What does that mean? So he explains as follows: So inyan, the kol pratei hamishkan mechuvanim kineged kol pratei olam shebara hayotzer yisparach. All of the details of the mishkan parallel the details of the world itself that God created. The Mishkan is a world, is a universe in microcosm. For who shochein b'chlal ha'olam? And God, of course, dwells in the world which He created. When God commanded that the Mishkan and its kelim be created, what He was commanding was that the Mishkan be built in such a way that it be a microcosm of the world. V'hera HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Moshe Tzohar Kol HaOlam Kasha Yevua B'Mikra HaSamuch. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu the Tzohar HaOlam. Tzohar literally is the form or the shape of the world. But in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu was shown by HaKadosh Baruch Hu the big picture. If the Mishkan is supposed to mimic the world, so Moshe Rabbeinu had to be given some understanding of the blueprints of the world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu what the world itself is like. He gave him an insight into the universe. And this insight into the universe enabled Moshe to better understand how to make the Mishkan. Building the Mishkan was not just, you know, they used to have, I don't know if they still have, these time life books. How to build a bookcase, how to build this, how to build that, you know. It wasn't just that Moshe Rabbeinu was given an IKEA plan, you know, by the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is how you do this, this is how you do that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu the theory of how the universe was constructed. And then he showed him how the Mishkan mimics that theory of how the universe itself exists. Uvazeh shenichlal b'mishkan tohar ha'olam b'chlalo ha'yeefshe la'ashkin shechinas Hashem shama. Through the fact that the Mishkan was a world in microcosm, that enabled the Shechina to come into the Mishkan. Because God is in the world, so Mimela, God will be in the Mishkan. But if the Mishkan is not a microcosm of the world, so God's Shechina is not going to come in. Right? So he explains a little bit more what this means. I mean, this is very philosophical. You know, what's the point? In other words, why was it necessary for Moshe Rabbeinu to have this intensive understanding of the blueprint of the world itself in order to make the Mishkan? So he goes on to explain in a practical sense. There are numerous details when it comes to the Mishkan that you and I, reading these details, would think that they're just incidental, and that the details were spelled out in such a way just to make the Mishkan, you know, for practical purposes, just to enable the Mishkan to stand up better. But if you were to modify the details slightly, it wouldn't make that much of a difference, right? I mean, if you've ever built anything, so you know that sometimes you can look at the instructions, and the instructions say, do it this way. And you know what? You realize that if you do it that way, it's also okay, right? You build a bookcase. They have you nail in the various nails around they have that thing that you attach to the back of the bookcase, right? And then you nail in the various nails to cement, you know, to steady that piece in place. So if you look on the formal instructions, you know, they gave you 50 nails, and you know, you put 20 on one side, 20 on the other side, 5 on the top, 5 on the bottom. And then you realize, you know what? If you take the 50 nails that they gave you, and you only use 25 of them, or 26 of them, and you kind of just bang them in at certain places, you know, around the periphery of the bookcase will hold up also, right? You don't have to do it mamish, you know, down to the smallest detail, exactly the way that they, you know, that they portray it on the instructions. Right? You can deviate a little bit. It's not the end of the world. Right, right. So, you know, you might think learning about these details of the Mishkan, look, obviously, you know, the menorah has to be the menorah. The Mizbeach has to be the Mizbeach. But says that it's Siv, let's take the following example. Kamo Chamishim Lulos, right? When the Urios, when the curtains were held together, there were 50 loops, you know, that were clasped together in order to keep the Urios together. Hayanir Sheino El Kitel Chabris Ayurios. You would think, why are the loops there? They're practical purposes, to keep the Urios, to keep the curtains together. Lefisa Lo Haya Echor Mehem Paraf Lahakeres Shelo. And therefore, you know, if 49 of them are connected, and one of them is not connected, Eno Mazik Mavato Kiva Mishkan. So you say, okay, Mishka Feluch, you know, I mean, you know, okay, so 49 of them are connected, the 50th isn't connected. You know, is anyone going to really be able to tell? The Mishkan is the Mishkan, right? As you'd think that the smallest little details you would think are not that important. Avolokin Adover. But that's not so. Elakacha hechrek lefi binyan ha'olam shenasu alulos negdom davka chamishu lulos perufos lahakrosim v'im yestar echad mehem are eno v'tar ha'olam v'eno yochol yos hashkino b'socham. Right? Says that it's if you should realize that it's not so. Everything in the Mishkan, every detail mimics something in the world or mirrors something in the world. If you have 49 loops connected and not 50, that doesn't parallel now something that's out there in the world that needs to be paralleled, and the absence of that detail will invalidate the entire Mishkan. You say, okay, what's one little loop? No, because every single detail has a reason, has a purpose. To understand that, Moshe Rabbeinu was given a little bit of insight into the world as a whole, and what the various parts of the Mishkan were supposed to represent, what elements of the world as a whole they were supposed to correspond to. Thus, Moshe Rabbeinu understood the importance of all of the details of the Mishkan, such that, you know, he could really impress upon the workers, you really got to do everything exactly, down to the wire, because even changing something that doesn't seem to be a big deal will prevent the Shekhinah from coming into the Mishkan. Yeah.
Why do you have to know all that? Bloodhound gives him the blueprint and tells him 50 loops. The first question is 50 loops.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you have to know that it's according to God's world, these 50 loops, or represent something in the world? If Hashem says 50 loops, 50 loops. If Hashem supposedly worked 6 days a week, he's waiting in the world in 7 days, why have to do it in 5 days? So I need 2 days off. Hashem works 6 days, that's why 6 days, you know. He tells
you
6 days, rather
than
it.
Right, so I think that it's...
You have to know the reason for it, because sometimes if you don't want to buy the reason, you'll say, no, because I don't have to do it. But if Hashem tells you, you know, 50, that's the reason enough, maybe you don't make 50 loops.
Right, so I guess, you know, the Nesiv is saying as follows. Look, if God gives me a law, you know, so every prat of the law, every detail of the law, even if I don't understand it, I carry out. But right, but if God gives me a construction project, so I might be tempted to say that that's not the case. In other words, the construction project is create this final result. And again, much like, I mean, Lahavdil, but I mean, much like, you know, the IKEA instructions, you know, this is one way to do it. But if you can get the thing up in a slightly different way, so kol hakavod. You know, so maybe Moshe Rabbeinu would think, okay, like certain details are suggested, but are not necessarily 100% required.
He says, if the Bible tells us 50, it should be 50. It can be 49, it can be 51, 50.
Right.
I mean, no matter what the reason might be, it's just 50.
Yeah. And I guess this just underscored for Moshe Rabbeinu, realize that this is not just a construction project, that this is something of much greater import. So every single detail, you know, there's no room for improvisation or anything like that, you know, because of, you know, what is represented over here.
What if the person says for us to leave Mikdash?
Right.
Then
it's not up to you.
Then you make it for me, you have to follow my blueprint.
Right.
Well, no matter what the reason might be, if I tell you 50, you think you can do it with 40? Then you make it for me, no different than a contractor.
Right.
The contractor is told to have to. And he wants you to make 4 windows, and he says, well, I'll make you 5 windows.
Right.
I'll make 4 windows.
Right. So I guess, again, you know, even in the case of the contractor, you're right. Deviating in terms of the number of windows, right, that would be a big deviation. You know, deviating in terms of the number of screws which he uses or nails that he uses or something like that, you know, it might not strike one as big a deviation. Look, you know, we hire somebody in the apartment. You know, I don't care how many screws you use to get it up. Use as many as it takes in order to make it.
But if I tell you you must use all these screws.
Right.
50 screws, you use 50 screws. That's it.
Right. Okay, then, right. So
51.
Why not?
But no, so I think the difference would be as follows. You know, if I say you must use 50, I understand. If you hand him 50 screws and say, okay, put this up. So what did the Baruch Shalom say when he said make 50 loops? Right? Did he mean make 50 and not 49 and not 51? Arguably, he meant, you know, put them together, 50 loops would be a good idea, right? So, again, you know, apparently the Nesiv says, you know, there was a way to look at it from that perspective. So the Rav Shlomo is just underscoring, no, I really mean, make 50. And if you don't make 50, the Shekhinah won't come into the Mishkan, because it's not going to work.
It's not for us to ask. Really, it's not for us to ask why 50.
Right.
That's the commandment. Maybe it's 50.
Right, but I guess the commandment itself is ambiguous, meaning make 50, you know. Oh, you want to make 40? Okay, so make 40 or whatever. You know, it's a no. Meaning, in a construction project, it might be different than a halach. Right.
The thing is, we still don't answer why the Mishkan had to mimic the world.
Well, why did the Mishkan have to mimic the world? So the Nesiv says, because to compress kivyachol the Shechina into a finite place would only work if that finite place could be seen as a microcosm of the universe itself. I mean, you know, how do you get God into a house? Right? How does that make any sense? You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. How do you stick him into a house? The only way to stick him into a house, kivyachol, is to say this is not a house. This is a diorama. This is a miniature of the universe. Right? If it's not a miniature of the universe, it's just a house.
But the Amish theory is an Olam Haba. That's a different world. That's not the universe.
Well, Melach HaLar is Kevaldo. God's glory fills up the entire world. Right? So God's in this world, whatever that means exactly. I don't fully understand what that means. Right? But God is everywhere. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is throughout the entire universe. Right? So the only way we can speak of God's Shechino being in this Mishkan is to say that the Mishkan somehow mirrors the universe as a whole. Right? That I think that's the idea that the Nesiv is bringing out. Yeah.
Can I bring a shiko raya to the Rav?
Okay. Can I say anything?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's not forget, this was already at Maamar Sinai.
Right.
After the Yegel.
Yeah.
Right? And Parshas Ekev, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you should make luchais, you should make an arid, you should make luchos, then make the arm.
Yeah.
Right? So Moshe
Rabbeinu
did the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Because Moshe Rabbeinu says, what do you mean? I made the arm, and it was good in Baruch Shalom. I did the opposite. Because, once I make luchos, who am I going to put them? So I have to make the arm first.
Right, so Moshe Rabbeinu thought to deviate from the construction plan, because it made more sense from a construction perspective.
Right. So maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was... what's the difference?
49,
50, 45,
I'll make 60. It'll hang together even better. Right?
Even better. So right. Maybe that's not going to be maybe made clear.
Oh, okay, very good.
Yeah,
very, very good. So in other words, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu had a half a meter to make the Aron before he made the Luchos.
And he did.
Right, you know. So you see that when it comes to Inyanim of construction, you know, you're allowed, one would think that one is allowed to use a little bit of your seichel, you know, just in terms of interpreting it. So that's the pasuk has to come and tell him, no, exactly the way it is. So coming back to so the Hamikdavar claims that that's what the Tosefta Menachos means. The Ata Piresh Rabbi Yossi to Moshe Ros Kol Hamalacha Shvul Chaser Prat Kachon Echon Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe. When Moshe Rabbeinu looks at the Mishkan at the end of Sefer Shmos, Vayar Moshe's Hamalacha Finei Osu Osa Kasher Tziv Hashem Es Moshe. Not only did they do it, they did it down to the last detail. Where do we see that there was this insistence that there should be no deviation even in a detail that seems to be extraneous, or it seems to be just a practical detail? So comes Rabbi Yossi and he says it's from this pasuk. Right? So where did Moshe Rabbeinu get its sivui that you're not supposed to deviate even in the slightest? So he learns that from this pasuk. This pasuk is telling him, right? Make it in such a way that the Shechina can come in, i.e., without deviation. And then he goes on to explain the next pasuk. Again, the next pasuk, according to Rashi, was just a continuation of this pasuk. We also li mikdash kuchalash ani maroscha, right? But again, the Nesiv has already started to develop his own mahalich. So let's see what he says on the next pasuk. Kuchalash ani maroscha, chala mikro miutar. All of pasuk test seems to be extraneous. Shemivar vehelach, shemivar veholeich, hey achlasos. I mean, the whole rest of the parsha is going to tell us exactly how to make the Mishkan. So, what's the point of saying Kichol Asher Ani Maros Chai Stavnis HaMishkan Stavnis Kol Kelov V'chein Ta'asu? Right, do whatever I'm going to tell you to do. Right, as they say, a good speaker, you know, has three parts to his speech. He tells them what he's going to tell them. He tells them, and then he tells them what he just told them. Right, but that's not the way the Torah functions. The Torah doesn't tell you what it's going to tell you, right? So kechol asher ani maros chol would seem to be extraneous. So that's what he said. So says the Nesiv, el mishum shenofol kama pa'amim sfeikos v'kabonos adover. Oftentimes, and I think this answers Harry's point from before, oftentimes when you're told to do something, you'll have a suffix, you'll have a doubt as to what exactly was meant, how to execute it, particularly in something involving construction. Right, if you don't have a cup for construction projects, somebody can describe to you what to do, and you do something totally different. Right, many people. Right, right. Elamish. So if it miyodeh ha'adam neged ma'hu ba, yodeh l'chavim biyoser eich la'asos. You know, how can you be more sure when you have sfeikos in a construction project? When you have a picture in your mind as to what the ultimate product is supposed to look like, so then you'll have a much easier time with this detail and that detail. Right? If you're just randomly, you know, fitting piece A into piece B and banging piece C and, you know, putting D into E and all of that, and you have no idea what you're building or what the thing is supposed to look like at the end, so, you know, maybe you'll get it right, maybe you won't. If you know that you're building a bookcase and you sort of have a picture of, in your mind, of this is what it's supposed to look like, and this piece is, you know, this part, and this piece is that part, and you have a sense of what the final product is supposed to look like. So that's going to make your job a lot easier. Right, that's why Bezalel, the architect of the Mishkan, is described as being filled up with chachma, tevuna, and das, with wisdom. Bezalel, say Chazal, knew how to put together the letters of Hashem's name in a way that bespoke a tremendous wisdom. Why was it so important for him to know that? Right, he's an architect. Right? If he knows architecture, fine. Well, why does he have to know the Shemus and how to put the osios of Hashem's name together in such a way? Because, again, if the Mishkan corresponds to the universe, so whenever you have a shaila about how to build the Mishkan, it will help you if you have an understanding of the universe. Meaning, you know, we read the psukim of the Mishkan, we think, okay, it's just an instruction manual. Put A into B, put C into D. It's not so simple. And witness the fact that it's not so simple, because you have different opinions among the Rishonim as to what the Mishkan looked like exactly. You know, it's not as simple as just put, you know, A into B, C into D, and be done with it. Right? There's a certain amount of interpretation that's going to come through, even with the instructions that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. So if you have a sense of how the Mishkan corresponds to the universe, and if you have an understanding of these ideas in the universe that the Mishkan is supposed to reflect, so then when you have a shaila about how to build the Mishkan, you'll have a better sense of which way to go, which interpretation is the correct one, because you'll have a sense of what the ultimate product is supposed to be like.
Also, this is the only thing that the Sabbath is going to build. In the desert, they had nothing to build.
Right. One project thing.
Was there a picture blueprint of the
Israel
as well?
So keep going. Uvazeh move on old b'maisa ha-menorah. So let's come back to a question that the Nesiv asked before, and he didn't really, come back to. It says over here in this pasuk that God showed Moshe Rabbeinu tavnis ha-mishkan and tavnis kol kelov. He showed him the blueprint of the Mishkan and of all of its kelim. So then, what's unique about the menorah, for instance? Where, you know, we're told later on, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand what the menorah looked like, so God showed him an image of the menorah. God showed Moshe Rabbeinu an image of all the kelim, not just the menorah. Well, why single out the menorah? Well, was that moving all Mashin's kasha Moshe b'maisa menorah? We now begin to understand a little bit more why Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time with the making of the menorah. Why? V'ikim mashmo ma'ze hoya koshelo. Look, there was a bayis sheni where they somehow managed to make a menorah. What's so difficult about making a menorah that Moshe Rabbeinu needed to be shown by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Why is the menorah so difficult out of all the kelim? I'm sorry. Oh, so he says less fabulous. V'su hamashal also be'asmo ela amar parasha kedvar Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't make the menorah. He just said over to Betzalel what the menorah is supposed to look like. El apirish lo yada l'chaving prate ha-menorah neged ma mechuvon kol prat u-Betzalel yada. When Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time with the menorah, it didn't mean that he had a hard time with the construction of the menorah. It means he had a hard time conceptually with the menorah. He didn't understand what every detail of menorah corresponded to in terms of the universe. Right? If again, all of the kelim correspond to different things in the world, Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, I understand the Mizbeach, I understand this, I understand that. The menorah, I'm having a hard time. I don't understand. I can build a menorah, that's not a problem. Right? I can instruct Bezalel how to build a menorah, but I don't get what the menorah is supposed to represent in its entirety. I don't understand all the pratim of the menorah. Uva kosuv lomar kichol asher ani maros chotavnis hamishkan. Hainu ha'olamo shein tavnis ha-mishkan v'tavnis kol kelov ha-mefurashim eichem ona'asim. Avo lo ra'o Moshe ha-mishkan v'kol kelov l'malo zulas ha-menoro u-mizbeach. B'menoro k'siv u-re'eva asey b'savnisam asher atar mare b'har mishum sh'niskashe Moshe l'chavin kol prat. Al kein her'o HaKadosh Baruch Hu ha-menoro b'tzurasa Vilimdohu Prote Hatavnish Baolom Shikneged Prote Hamenorah. Right? So says the Netziv, in this pasuk it says that Moshe Rabbeinu was taught the general sense of what the Mishkan and all of its kelim represented. In other words, this is not this pasuk. Kichol asher animara uscha is tavnis hamishkan is tavnis kol kelov doesn't mean that he had a picture. You know, Hakadosh Baruch Hu had a PowerPoint presentation, and he showed Moshe Rabbeinu in 3D what each of the elements of the Mishkan looked like. That's not what this pasuk means. When the pasuk talks about the tavnis hamishkan and tavnis kol kelov, it's telling us, roughly speaking, what it corresponds to in the universe. But in the menorah in particular, Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, I kind of get what you're talking about, Ribbono Shel Olam, but still, the pratim, you know, the exact way in which parts of the menorah correspond to parts of the universe, I'm having a hard time with. That's all the, you know, that's all the back and forth between Moshe Rabbeinu and the Ribbono Shelom. And Moshe, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'll show you the full extent of what the menorah represents and is all about. Right? Next part. Okay, we'll leave that next part. But essentially, says the Netziv, Moshe Rabbeinu here is given two commandments: make the Mishkan without any deviation, so that the Shekhinah can come down and dwell there, and build the Shekhinah, build the Mishkan rather, with an eye towards the purpose of the Mishkan. Whenever you're not quite sure to do it this way, to do it that way, keep in mind the ultimate representation that the Mishkan represents, and keep in mind the ultimate representation that the Kalim represent, and you'll be able to pull it off. That way you'll understand what it is that you're trying to do over here. You'll understand the goal, and it won't just be an exercise in fitting A into B, C into D. You'll have a sense of what you want to do over here. That's why I'm giving you an insight into how, in general terms, how the elements of the Mishkan correspond to the universe as a whole.
Do we know exactly which parts of the Mishkan correspond to what in the universe? Is it mentioned anywhere?
So the Netziv is going to speak about it a little bit. That's again, he doesn't go through every prat, but what the other thing which I want to speak about tonight is the Kaporis and the Kruvim, and specifically how that, you know, is meant to correspond to something in the universe.
And I think also is that in the Shuz Mahal, you now understand very well in Pashas Pekudei why every single time mentioned Kashas, see my Shuz Mahal, like 45 times. Every single component was not done with a seichel.
Right.
It was done.
Right. Every prat, you know, was exactly. Was done exactly. Yeah, every prat was done exactly the right way.
How come the Sif was an actor, right? Technically. So how come, you know, not only does he disagree with all the Rishonim, but he seems to have these insights that none of the Rishonim have, plus the stuff that the Rishonim tell us is not as teeth as what the Netziv says.
Well, so I'll answer, the Torah didn't stop in 1500, right? Can still learn Torah today, and you know, people can come up with new chidushim, and it's okay, right? I mean, the Netziv is claiming that what he's saying, in a certain sense, goes back to a Tosefta, right? As remember, that was the starting point. You know, the Tosefta itself, you know, juxtaposes the pasuk at the end of Shmos with the pasuk over here. You know, v'asu l'mikdash v'shachanti b'salchav. So the Netziv would claim, I'm not saying anything new. I'm just saying what's in the Tosefta. That's what he would say. In terms of the fact that we find oftentimes that Rishonim say things that are sort of very simple or seemingly simple and bland, quote unquote, and the Achronim say things that are very deep, that seem to be very sharp and very deep. So first of all, we should realize that the Rishonim, in very sparse language, manage to convey very deep ideas. The Achronim spell it out more. But oftentimes, what the Achronim spell out at length is really in the Rishonim. If we just go back and read the Rishonim a little bit closer, you know, we try to understand the depth of what the Rishonim were able to convey in a few short words. Oftentimes, is something that the Achronim spent pages and pages conveying, right? I mean, and that's typical in Gemara study, where an Achron will say something and then say, and by the way, if you look at Rashi. If you read Rashi carefully, Rashi seems to be saying the same thing. This whole Torah that I said is really in three words in Rashi. It's not unusual. The late Rosh Yeshiva Karen Biavna, Chaim Yaakov Goldos, once noted this phenomena that, you read an Achronah Shishtikol and it's exciting and it's razzle-dazzle and everything like that. And, you read a Rishon on a Sugya and sometimes it's kind of very... However, it doesn't sound like, it's some amazing, incredible, answer to some kind of question. So he noted that, he gave the analogy of a person who's in a room and is looking for the way out. So if he doesn't know the way out, you know, he'll try all kinds of unusual ways, you know, to theorize about how he can get out this way and that way. If he knows the way out, so, you know, if he knows that the only way out of the room is a skylight, you know, so he'll take the skylight, you know, even though it doesn't seem like an obvious way out of the room. So he said that, you know, the Rishonim had such insight into Torah that sometimes they just give what seems to be a rather simplistic explanation, but they know that that's the way out, you know, they understand that that's the way out. The Achronim, who, again, perhaps are further away from a deep understanding of Torah, sometimes give razzle-dazzle interpretations, but, you know.
He seems to be able to see things that he's not claiming to take from any of the Rishonim.
Okay, I mean, that's okay.
Original things.
That's okay, you're allowed to be original. That's what you see.
Why is it the Pesach that you would think Pesach tests would precede Shechanti Pesach? In other words, making a Mikdash, you do it according to the way, according to my specs, and make sure everything is done exactly what I say, and then the Shechanti Pesach.
Right, so that's the way Rashi essentially reads the Pesach. Right, so I think because the way that it's Siv reads the words v'shochanti besocham, again, is not as a result, but v'shochanti besocham modifies the manner in which the mikdash is made. V'asuli mikdash v'shochanti besocham, if you want to make me a mikdash such that I will dwell among them, so then k'chol asher ani mare oscha, then you have to do it, you know, in exactly in accordance with the, you know, the image of the universe that I've showed to you. You know, that's the only way to make the Shechina come in, right? So
without that not being in order, you can say that's Russia.
Right, right. Now, and the Nesiv claims that this fits the Pesukim better than Rashi, because according to Rashi, you have to.
This doesn't seem like it's conditional at all. Pesach by itself is not conditional. Make me a Mikdash, and I will dwell in it. And of course, then it goes on to how the Mikdash is supposed to be made. And
right.
But, you know,
I'm,
you make it the right way, and I'm coming.
Right. So, I mean, the Nesiv is claiming that it's hard to read the Pesach better.
But he's taking it out of context, because he's saying, the Shechanti Osam, he's really basically saying it comes after the fact that it's going to be built without something in it.
Right, but in other words, the Shechanti Besochan doesn't mean, and then I will dwell among them. It means, in a manner in which I can dwell among them.
But is that the way normally Mishanti Besachon would go?
No, it's a chiddush in terms of how we reach the Pesach, but what he gains from doing that is that now the Pesach can be read in order without having to assume that Mishanti Besachon is a parenthetical remark the way that Rashi understands it as being such. I mean, like any interpretation, you know, every interpretation has milus and chesroinus, you know, so I mean, it's a little bit of a forced way of reading Mishanti Besachon, but it fits in to the order of the Pesach. Okay, I want to talk the rest of the time that we have tonight. Just want to talk about the Kruvim a little bit. If we go a little bit further in the pasuk in the perek, right? Chafhei Yudzayin Velsiso Kapores Zahav Tahar. Right, you should make the kapores, the covering, on top of the aron. Velsiso Shnayim Kruvim Zahav. Should make two kruvim out of gold. So these two kruvim, we know, again, Chazal tell us, represent the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. But Chazal tell us famously that, you know, when Klal Yisrael is Osir Ritzono Shel Makom, the kruvim face one another. When Klal Yisrael is Ein Osir Ritzono Shel Makom, they're not doing God's will, the kruvim are facing away and facing out. The Nesiv writes on Pasuk Yud Ches, you know, why is it that the Kruvim were male and female? So he says male and female represent the idea of a mashpia and a mushpa, someone who gives the male and someone who receives the female, right? And that depiction is a depiction of the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael as a whole. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mashpia on Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael receives that hashpa, that influence, that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bestow upon them. So the two kruvim represent, in a sense, the relationship, not HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly, but the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. And he reads a very interesting diuk in the pasuk. The next pasuk Yutes says, Va'asei kruv echad mikatsa mizeh u'kruv echad mikatsa mizeh. You shall make one kruv on one side and one kruv on the other side at each of the ends. Mina kaporis tasu es akruvim ashnek sosof. Make the two kruvim on the two edges of the kaporis. The Nesiv asked why the word va'asei, and you shall make, is necessary. Because the truth is, you know, later on, in you know, when the Torah describes how the Mishkan was actually made, it eliminates the word va'asei. Kruv echad mikatsa mizeh, kruv echad mikatsa mizeh. The word va'asei and make doesn't really seem to add all that much, right? So he comes up with a very interesting chiddush. He says that the two kruvim had to be made simultaneously. Right. In other words, you had to have two people working on either side of the kaporis, forming the kruvim out of the metal of the kaporis, and they had to be made at the same time. Va'asei, you shall make kruv echad mikatsa, kruv echad mikatsa. You have to somehow make these two kruvim simultaneously at the same time.
What does that mean? If like one has at the end the one wing, the other one has to have the same exact wing, they have to both be only in the same place when they're building.
I guess they have to be finished simultaneously. I mean, you know, l'malachi asharis, you know, they can't do every single prat at the same time, I guess. But in other words, they should be finished simultaneously. Even though, you know, one would be tempted to make the kruvim one at a time. But again, how exactly, you know, if one finishes 30 seconds before the other, like, I don't know if it has to be timed down to the second. But again, with, you know, within a certain amount of reason, you know, there's both kruvim are supposed to be created simultaneously and not in succession, which would be, the more normal way of doing it. You know, work on one side and then, you know, go over to the other side and work on the other one.
In the practice of Masisa, is that one person doing it? Or is that just a command that it should be done that way?
Vasei? Or
Masisa? And all the other stuff, Kapara Saha, Masisa Shnaim, Kruvim Saha, is that one person doing it? Or is that just a command or that it should be done?
Right, so
if it's one person, then Vasei should be also the same one person.
Right, so I mean, the way Nesiv presents it is that it would be impossible for one person to do it because, you know, they were far enough apart that you couldn't work on both of them simultaneously and enable them to both emerge, you know, simultaneously at the same time. See, I mean, you have to I think you have to understand if Yosisa means, you know, you collectively have to cause these kruvim to emerge. I mean, it's a chiddush. He says that
the previous said Vasisa, that also
you collectively,
you and the collective shall make this, or Vasisa means one person.
Right. So I guess based on the Nesiv's understanding here, it's a collective you. You know, it's not one person in particular. Yeah.
I can understand. I think why the one of the kruvim was male, one was female, right? Because when Hashem created Adam, it's Adam, a kev, and sarkani, female, or one goat.
Right.
Right.
The Mahalach is saying is that the Zohar represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Nekev represents Klal Yisrael, meaning it's Mashpia and Mushpa, right? And that's what's being conveyed over here. Yeah.
Is this sort of a root to the fact that when the Mishkan represents the pattern of the universe, not just the physical pattern of the physical creation, but the philosophy of the universe?
Yeah, you know, exactly. It's, you know, everything about the universe itself. So, he says, why was it so important for the two kruvim to be created simultaneously? Balulamdeinu bozeh shemetchilas habriya she'oz kol olav yisparach shem mashbiya. Right? From the very beginning of the world itself, which was when God became a mashbiya. Now, God always existed, but God became a mashpia. God became a source of influence on the world once there was a world. God can't be mashpia on anything else when there is nothing else. Right? So God becomes the Mashpia when the world is created. So at that very moment, God had in mind, so to speak, that there would be a Jewish people who would be the recipients of this hashpa. Right? The Kayodura Hadrash Rashis Bara Bishvil Yisosh Nikru Rashis. Right? The famous Drasha Rashi brings at the beginning of Chumash. Gracious Bar Elohim, Bishvil Yisosh Nikru Rashis. The universe was created with Klal Yisrael in mind to be the Mushpaim, to be those who would be the recipients of the Hashpa, the influence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to provide. So both Kruvim are formed simultaneously to speak to that very sublime truth. That the moment the Mashpia as Mashpia came into existence, at that very moment the thought of the Mushpa, the recipient, also came into existence. That the two partners in this drama of Hashpa'a come into existence simultaneously, and that's hinted at through the very construction of the Kruvim. So I think that's an example. I mean, just going back to what we learned from the Netziv before, where, you know, everything's in the details. You know, here the Pasuk implies, the Pasuk doesn't say, the Pasuk implies, the way the Netziv says that the Kruvim have to be made simultaneously, it's definitely possible to read the Pasuk and not come to that conclusion, and in fact to wonder why it should matter. If in the end of the day the final product is the final product, in other words, you know, whether I make the Kruvim simultaneously or whether I make them successively, you know, the Kapar is going to look the same, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, you'd better do it in this way because the whole representation of the Kruvim, you know, is linked to the fact that they're being made simultaneously. Everything that they represent, you know, all the significance of the Kruvim is based on the fact that they're coming into existence at the same time. So, you know, this little prat, which you might be inclined to dismiss as, you know, okay, who cares? Do it this way, do it that way. It's not even like God said it directly. It's kind of implied. You know, maybe yeah, maybe no. You know, so again, go back to the IKEA example. IKEA says, you know, that I should put part A into part B. I want to put part B into part A. You know, what does it really matter in terms of the order in which I do it? I hold it like this, I hold it like that. It doesn't really make a difference. No, it does make a difference because these little details have profound symbolic value, which, you know, is only going to be achieved if you do it in this way, and the Shechina will only come into the Mishkan if you do it in this way in particular. Right? So this is just a little example of this idea which the Netziv wants to bring out.
You know, I remember seeing the Moshe the Gundel Magid in the old Yemen magazine a long time ago, that they hired an architect, right, and they built this beautiful museum with a big dome, and by dedication, the thing collapsed. So he asks his engineers, what did you do with it? You didn't put the pillars in.
All the details count because all the details have profound significance in terms of what they represent. Okay, wish everybody good Shabbos and see you in Yirtzeh Hashem next week. I think we're one short of a minion, I think. Okay. Maybe there's somebody hiding in the kitchen. Huh? All right. Next week.
Right,
let me give you the.
Oh yeah, I forgot.